The first reading is going to be from Gloria Anzaldúa's book, Borderlands La Frontera, The New Mestiza. In this groundbreaking book, first published in 1987, she describes the experience of being on the border geographically, psychologically, and spiritually. She describes in poetry and prose the many ways she combines cultures and identities, Mexican, U.S., an indigenous, lesbian, academic, traditional, radical, female, and the ways that that divided and enriched and disoriented her. The inclusion of a reference to Yemayaya, to Yemaya in the selection is perplexing to me. The only Yemaya I know is the Yoruban Arista or aspect of the one God, but she's associated with water, not wind. And here it is.
Beneath the iron sky, Mexican children kick their soccer ball across, run after it, entering the U.S. I press my hand to the steel curtain, chain-link fence, crowned with rolled barbed wire, rippling from the sea where Tijuana touches San Diego, unrolling over mountains and plains and deserts. This tortilla curtain running into El Rio Grande, flowing down to the flatlands of the magic valley of South Texas, its mouth emptying into the Gulf. 1,950 mile-long open wound, dividing a pueblo, a culture, running down the length of my body, staking fence rods in my flesh, splits me. Me raja, me raja. This is my home, the thin edge of barbed wire, but the skin of the earth is seamless. The sea cannot be fenced. El mar does not stop at the borders. To show the white man what she thought of his ignorance, Yemaya blew that wire fence down. This land was Mexican once, was Indian always, and is and will be again.
When I heard the song we're going to hear next, this version of When Love Comes to Town, on a drive between here and Cleveland, I said, that's it. That's exactly feels like the experience I had in Phoenix at the end of July. All over town, in restaurants and on the street, people came up to us yellow shirts and hugged us and thanked us for being there. Some that we met in jail cried. I don't mean to imply that UU's Road to the Rescue of Helpless People on July 29th in Phoenix. We did, however, bring energy and attention to the struggle for human rights valiantly fought by smart, dedicated immigrant rights groups against such overwhelming power. To me, Arizona felt like the South of my childhood, a place of hatred and tension and horrible unfairness. Imagine what it would have been like if 200 Unitarian Universalists in screaming yellow tees were parachuted with the 101st Airborne Division into Little Rock in 1957 to spend a day holding hands with those nine brave young people. It's kind of what it felt like. This is long, and it demands that you move. So I hope that you will feel free to do what the music demands.
Don't you know love is the greatest thing that the world has ever known? We'll be right back.
vigil for us outside the jail. They danced. The second night when Puente leader Sal Raza was in jail, they actually had a DJ. And I have pictures of some of our UU leaders in a conga line. Radical dancing. At 12:01 a.m. on July 29th, the day the infamous Senate Bill 1070 went into effect in Arizona, the people of Guadalupe, whole families, including children in pajamas, quietly filled the streets at the edge of town. Guadalupe's 1 square mile is home to mostly Native Americans and Latinos. Lying just outside of Phoenix, they have struggled for years with Sheriff Joe Arpaio's racist and anti-immigrant policing. They blocked the intersection and held it for more than an hour, holding signs declaring their opposition to the new law and leading chants against police brutality. They declared that Arpaio's officers were not welcome in their town. They made their point. The sheriff's officers did not enter, and the people quietly returned to their homes, clothed in their dignity. About 90 minutes later, in a home in the valley, you use DRE's home, in another town outside of Phoenix, I awoke to prepare for a day of civil disobedience in support of the residents of Guadalupe and the hundreds of thousands of other people of color in Arizona. Immigrants, illegal immigrants, those two words are threaded throughout the story of our time in Arizona. Yet our partners in Puente would point out that Arizona is waging war on the indigenous peoples of the area, people whose ancestors have been in the Southwest for tens of thousands of years, who, they ask, actually entered illegally. And it's important that we explore this on this holiday in this city. Until the Mexican-American War, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and California were part of Mexico. Long before that, the indigenous people moved freely across the land that includes the U.S. Southwest and Mexico. Gloria Anzaldúa's and many of our partners believe, with some evidence that white folks accept, that the people that we call the Aztecs began in the area of the U.S. Southwest. Their Aztlan, or Eden, they believe is located there. Some migrated into Mexico and Central America about 3,000 years ago. Mestiza is a Mexican term for those with both that indigenous and European ancestry. I believe with the UUA President Peter Morales and the Minister of the UU Church of Phoenix, Susan Frederick Gray, that immigration is the civil rights issue for our time. Our policies and practices that imprison people without due process, yank parents from their children, create a climate of racialized and inhuman policing of a Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and that leave workers to terrible exploitation must be fundamentally changed. The insert in the order of celebration in the white part contains some links to much more information, including a book that the UUA is suggesting we all read this year. These anti-immigrant laws are fundamentally fueled, I believe, by fear of shifting demographics, and unless we take a stand, we're going to lose our ideals of love and hospitality, those expressed in our story this morning, those offered by Ohioans 200 years ago as they joined the Underground Railroad and helped get people then labeled illegal to safety. We must struggle for the world we want. What I want to focus on this morning is how we go about that struggle. How can we be good allies to people who are targets? How we did what we did in Arizona is a good example, I think. We did our justice work well, not perfectly, but well. You can sum up the entire sermon in just a few words. The title, Show Up, Listen, Act, and the words from Moore's new book, Writing in the Sand. Change of heart brings you into the kingdom, or you could say beloved community, where you discover the power of love to heal. A few months ago, when Senate Bill 1070 was signed into law and civil rights groups called for a boycott of Arizona, the UUA, that means us, was thrown into a struggle over what we should do about the fact that our 2012 General Assembly, the gathering of all our congregations once a year, was scheduled for Phoenix. And we had already signed key contracts. About $500,000 was already in play. Our story started earlier than that for our congregations in Arizona. 2 years before, some activists within one congregation began forcing the issue of immigration. Another congregation had members who lacked residency documents, and a widow of a police officer who had been killed in the line of duty, who was very disturbed by the use of his death as justification for abusive policies. At about the same time, our Tucson congregation adopted No Más Muertos, No More Deaths, as a ministry of the congregation, one in which many faiths participate. Among other things, they supply water to those crossing the desert. And we actually have one young adult down there doing this ministry now, and a youth who will join her in a few months. The religious professionals from those engaged congregations call for us to continue to hold our GA in Phoenix and to use it to stand with their allies in the fight for immigration reform. And it got a bit ugly leading up to General Assembly 2010. Drum, diverse, revolutionary, Unitarian, Universalist, Multicultural Ministries, we do like long names, LUNA, Latina, Latino, Unitarian Universalist Networking Association, and the Allies Group, Allies for Racial Equality, all called on the UUA to move the 2012 GA from Phoenix, citing, among other things, safety concerns for UUs of color and the call for the boycott. The religious professionals from Arizona called for GA to remain in Phoenix and to stand with their local allies to make a difference. And of course, there was that $500,000. As I said, it got ugly. But I watched the GA streams on my computer, talked to friends who were there, and got my Facebook feeds, and so experienced part of the wonder that happened at GA when respect and love triumphed, and a compromise that everyone could live with the full participation of Drum and Luna and the allies, was worked out. This was helped in no small part by the appearance of Puente movement leader Salvador Reza, who invited and challenged us to partner with them as people of faith. We soon, very soon, had a down payment to make on this compromise. One of the strongest arguments against the compromise proposal that we hold a justice GA in Phoenix in 2012, where we actually put ourselves on the line to make a difference, was that we wouldn't do that. We'd just talk and pass resolutions. We, in fact, have passed at least 16 resolutions since the first one in 1963 on immigration. Senate Bill 1070 was scheduled to take effect on July 29th, just about a month after GA. And Sal Reza and Puente expected us to be there. How are we going to pull this off in the way we should? Well, our Phoenix congregations already had relationships with Puente and other local immigrants' rights groups. They were already showing up at the organizing meetings, as was our district exec there, Ken Brown. They were already listening. They were already acting. In fact, they had been instrumental in bringing 500 UUs, including Peter Morales, from around the country, all in our neon yellow shirts, to march in the protests just a month before GA. But that action was easy. In July, Puente wanted to call attention of the whole world to the outrages to human dignity in Arizona. To do that well, they needed support. They needed the support of people who would put their bodies, their safety, and their privilege on the line. People of privilege make a difference in the realm of world attention. I'm sure the question in the minds of the new partners was, will this group of predominantly white, middle-class, educated, religious people actually risk manhandling and jailing? I think they really had their doubts. In fact, Peter Morales and Susan Frederick Gray may have also had their doubts when they put out the call for all those willing to engage in civil disobedience. 200 of us answered that call. The UUA, usually on vacation in July, went into overdrive to provide the support we would need. Privilege was to be a funhouse mirror for our experiences in Arizona. First UU's mission statement talks about privilege. It reads, as you heard from Gina this morning, to relinquish the safety of our unexamined privilege for the freedom to engage in acts of transforming justice. And boy, did we think a whole lot, examine a whole lot, our privilege there. At every turn, our privilege was either stripped, brought us special treatment, or was asserted by us. We voluntarily gave it up at arrest, and most of us positively asserted it as we made our first appearance in court. I overheard the prosecutor remark to the clerk of the court that Unitarian Universalists could be trusted. We were moral. We would show up. So we were very careful to make sure the judge knew that we were UUs. Most of us religious professional UUs. And she released us without bail to go home, whether we lived in town or 2,000 miles away. That was extraordinary. Throughout our jail experiences, we witnessed what our class and skin color privileges bought us. Several of the European American protesters, and I was one of them, refused to provide identification. Yet it was only the protesters of color that were sent to talk for an interview with ICE. And it was only Latinos and Latinas who were manhandled and beaten during arrest. Susan Frederick Gray observed, "I was surprised how openly the sheriff and his deputies tried to draw lines between the protesters along race. I am told the sheriff went into one of the cells with some of the protesters and asked the white protesters what they were doing and why they cared about these Hispanics. Didn't they understand that they had more in common with the sheriff?" Audrey Williams, an African-American woman who needed a wheelchair while in jail, was held in solitary confinement for almost 20 hours. When she made repeated requests to be with her fellow protesters, they told her, "Those people, white people, don't care anything about you." They tried to bait us and divide us along race at every turn, and they spoke of their own work along racial lines. Show up, listen, act. Those words come from Ken Brown. He was the point person for those of us who were willing to take a rest if necessary. And I talked with him at length about the ways in which we were and were not good allies. In fact, we were indeed good allies, I believe, and Kim Bobo, the highly respected activist and author on religious activism, wrote a piece titled, "A Primer on Activism from the Unitarian Universalists," a string of words in that order which I never expected to see. In it, she lists 7 things that we did right on July 29th. If you'd like to read it, just Google her name, Bobo, and Unitarian. It'll pop right up. Show up. That means first and foremost, go to the people who are the center of the struggle. Don't stop at asking them to come to a forum to discuss the issue. Forums are important. We should never go into a struggle without some knowledge of the issues. Never. But the purpose of forums and study is to prepare for engagement. And this first step is often difficult. We may need to go to a part of town that we have fears about. We may look around and find that the only people we know there are the forum speakers. We may find that we're dressed differently than the people around us, and everybody else seems to know one another, and there we are, this small knot of folks from First UU. It can be unnerving, but it is a necessary part of a process that probably will transform each of us far more than it transforms the world. Let's add a phrase to Ken's sentence, with humility. Show up with humility. While we were being processed out of jail on Friday, some UUs and Puente folks, we were all together after we joined hands, were keeping vigil for us, dancing, doing all kinds of things. From time to time, we would hear the big drum, and it would calm our anxiety that we would get lost inside that disorganized monster, forever eating our rancid peanut butter, drinking water from the fountain attached to the toilet, and never sleeping. At least that was my anxiety. But then we'd hear the drum, and we'd know that there were people out there for us. Other UUs at that same time were doing what Puente asked us to do, cleaning the Puente offices, something they'd not had time to do since this string of laws had them out there every day fighting against the powers and principalities of darkness, to put it in biblical terms. They didn't ask us to write a white paper on immigration or to organize media. They asked us to clean their offices. And we did. I remember reading the account of one white ally in another situation who did babysitting for meetings for a whole year before she ever joined the discussion. And that brings me to Ken's next sentence. Listen. That's also really hard for us. Even if we come in with a lot of knowledge and some well-crafted proposals, it's important to listen for a good, long time. Listen and we'll learn about a reality we may not know existed. It may twist all those ideas and theories we arrived with into unrecognizable shapes, or this new reality may illuminate the plain black and white of our ideas with detailed color, giving the theories a whole new life and urgency. Listening will probably change us. Hearing what happened in the words with the passion of the people it happened to is different than hearing it from a leader. Showing up and listening may even be the beginning of transformation. In fact, doing justice work should always be transformative, or we're not doing it right. It's my belief that the experience of being a good ally in this instance, in Arizona, will transform the Unitarian Universalist movement. We will experience a change of heart, and the way we see the world will change. We will enter the borderlands. We will become border people. Gloria Anzaldúa, from whom we took our first reading, wrote about what it means to be in the borderlands. Border people, mestizos, live in a perpetual state of being on a psychological and spiritual border, straddling two countries and three cultures. When we enter into justice work with a whole heart, we enter the borderlands, the liminal space, where everything is in the process of becoming. Nothing fits neatly into the little boxes we brought with us. Thomas More calls this by the Greek word metanoia, a deep change of heart. He says, metanoia comes at a great cost. You are asked to give up an understanding of life that's been in place for a long time. You were invited to live by a set of values that don't offer ego rewards at first, but only reward you after you discover the joy of community and agape, the law of love. You were also faced with the challenge of living by values that contradict those of normal society. The new world you find on the other side of change demands courage and sometimes your very life. Act. That's the last sentence. My experience in Phoenix brought some of these rewards in the very beginning. When we acted, we created a microcosm of beloved community. We formed community again and again on July 29th and 30th, beginning with joining hands with those from Puente and others in the intersection before the sheriff's offices and declaring it a human rights zone. The time in the holding cells was difficult, and I was in a lot of pain, and yet it was precious. Deputies moved us around at least once an hour, mixing us in various cells, and we continued to receive new prisoners. Latinas stopped for no good reason and held essentially because they couldn't pay the fines that resulted from the last time they were stopped for no good reason, continued to arrive throughout the night and the following day. Each time we formed community again, we introduced ourselves, we told jokes, we learned songs and hymns in English and Spanish from one another. We danced the chicken dance. We took turns sitting down, gave each other massages. We did yoga and had an impromptu worship service prior to the 6:30 a.m. meal. We expressed and received a constant stream of love. It was the beloved community in action. It was what I think Thomas More means by Jesus' kingdom. The version of Jesus' words that's come down to us describes kingdom as a place where all are brought together around one table, regardless of status or documentation, a place where the sick are healed, not shunned, the hungry are fed, and those in prison are visited as if they are the ruler of the kingdom. Creating beloved community has the power to heal. Thomas More says, and I quote, "It is in those moments when you feel you don't belong and can't fit in and are no longer worthy of being included that the kingdom is near," end quote. He speaks of making the world a community of people focused on overcoming their narcissism and egotism. Personally, we will be healed, and collectively the world will be healed when we overcome those infantile and neurotic need to be above those who were not in our club. And isn't that the essence of universalism? Isn't this what we are called to do? All will be saved. Everyone is in the same club, period. Isn't this the message we have to bring? Not in well-crafted words primarily, though those are nice, but in our actions in the world, in who we stand up beside, who we ally ourselves with, and the humble, questing, and joyful attitude with which we do it. So that we can say with our grandfather in the story this morning, "Ain't nobody a stranger to me." If you would like to work on being a good ally, on building the beloved community, let me invite you to join me, to join with Chicago Cox and Tony McDonald and me for the first of four sessions of Building the World We Dream About. It begins on Wednesday, and there's more information on Goldenrod.